Hi, I'm Ken Sweeney. This is The Comfortable Spot. Welcome. Today, my guest is Lieutenant Commander Grace Fanning. Grace is a member of the Irish Naval Service, which is one of three branches of the Irish Defence Forces. Originally from County Carlow, Grace has spent the last 22 years in the Irish Navy and has recently finished her post as Commanding Officer of the Eddie Roisin. I came across Grace on Twitter, which she uses to post photos and videos about life on board a ship of the Irish Navy, and I thought it would be interesting to have her on as a guest to find out more about being an officer. So I hope you're sitting comfortably and happy to stay with us. Grace, thanks very much for joining me on The Comfortable Spot.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here, Ken. Nice to meet you.
Now, come here, I have to ask you something. Do I call you Captain or what do I do? What's the story?
Well, you can call me Grace, but it's Lieutenant Commander Fanning.
Fantastic.
but yeah, so my rank is Lieutenant Commander.
Right.
And my job up until Monday was I was Captain of Eddie Roisin. So that was my job title rather than my rank.
Okay, so we don't have a Star Trek situation here. You know, you're not just a Captain, are you? So there's a different
done.
And is that just indicative to the Irish Navy, or is that a naval situation as it is across the world?
No, it's a naval situation.
Like right.
our first rank, just when I used to love Star Trek growing up every Saturday night, but they're ensign. Remember Ensign Crusher? Our very first rank is ensign.
Great.
So I was an ensign when I started. So I used to make me laugh.
Yeah, so but you're not actually a captain as such, is that you're not officially a captain? It's just when you're on board, is it?
Yeah, so like I'll be captain of a ship, like that's the role.
Yeah.
But it's Lieutenant Commander, like, so if anyone's talking to me, it's like Lieutenant Commander Fanning. That's the actual rank that I go by.
And here's the thing I have to ask you. Lieutenant, Lieutenant, where did all this come from?
Oh, it's American. Lieutenant would be American and Lieutenant then is
European.
The rest of Europe and the rest of the world.
I see. And that's grand. Because, like, you know, you always get these arguments. And with the way American TV comes into our world nowadays, it's just, they blend, don't they? And some people say it one way and then some people say it the other way.
Yeah, no, exactly. But no, it's Lieutenant over here. But if somebody said Lieutenant, I wouldn't, it doesn't affect me.
Grand. And you know, the funny thing is, you were talking about Star Trek, right? I was in this kind of thing about a week ago where I was dragged into this kind of group chat, kind of a Zoom thing, and they were talking about TV, you know, TV shows that are currently out at the moment, and Star Trek came into it. And in one of the Star Trek episodes, somebody was a Commodore. And there was a big row broke out. There was two American guys and two English guys, and they were both disclaiming the fact that Commodore is not used anymore. Can you back that up? Is Commodore still used?
No, Commodore. Our flag officer is Commodore.
Right.
He's Commodore of the Navy.
Yeah. This is what happens when nerds get together, you see, because they're arguing over this. No, Commodore, by the 23rd century, Commodore will be completely unused, you know? And
like, oh, I do. Commodore's still a rank. Yeah, it's definitely still a rank.
And like somebody just asked me, and they said to me, do you know you live in Europe? And I went, I live in Europe, God. And I said, yeah, it is.
I can back you up. Commodore Mick Malone is our flag officer. And
brilliant.
He'll back you up as well.
That's great, because I just rolled the dice on that, you know, and I thought of the lad that's the statue, Commodore Barry in Wexford, and I said, okay, it's got to be one still. So
he's an interesting man. Actually, Commodore Barry from Wexford started the US Navy.
That's
he's
right.
He's a very interesting man.
Yeah, it's been drilled into me since I was 4 years of age, because we had a little holiday home down in Curraghcloe. So we used to go to Wexford every Saturday, you know, for the shopping. And And my father used to just point up every time I was there. Hey, that's Commodore Barry. He formed the US Navy. You told me that last week. Now I'm going there with my kids and I'm going, see that statue? Do you know who that is? And I'm like, it's Commodore Barry. So here I am repeating what my poor father used to do to me. So Grace, listen, we have to get back onto you.
Okay, sorry.
I have to ask you the very first question, because it's something that I would have never thought of doing as a child or a kid or a teenager. What drew you to join the Navy?
That's a good question. I think still people don't see it. I think that's half the issue at the moment that we're having. But when I was growing up, I have six brothers and a sister, and I'm from Carlow, from a little village called Ballin.
I only live a few miles away. Yeah, go.
Yeah, you're from Ballytor, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My parents still have my brothers have taken over a dairy farm, so I'd be driving up every now and again from home to help them drop up milk samples up the Ballytor to the Glanbia factory there.
You know it indeed. The lights never go out in Glanbia.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a big operation.
Yeah, it is.
But I was big into sports. I liked to be in outdoors. I actually wanted to be a guard when I was in national school. I thought that's the sort of things I was interested in. And then when I went into secondary school, I thought that I went more. I wanted to go to UCD to do agricultural science is actually what I wanted to do and what I put on my CA form. But my mum was like, "Oh, there's no jobs in agriculture. There's no and like I didn't really know." We went to you were saying you were you have a had a holiday home when you were or you went down to holidays in Cahor in Carrick Club. But we used to rent a house in Cahor every year, so that was my visit to the sea once a year. But I didn't know what I wanted. And my mum, then when I was in leaving cert, she said, "Why don't you try?" Her father was actually in the army. He got a DSM in the Congo. She said, "Why don't you try the cadets?" And because I didn't know, but she knew me. She knew I was into sports. She knew I was into and didn't want to do that sort of thing because she wanted me to go and do national school teaching. You know, a good solid job, a good holidays, and good pension. And but I didn't. I thought I was a bit of an action person. I wanted to do something, you know, outside. So she said, "Go, why don't you try the cadets?" So I looked up the Army and Navy cadets and went for both of them. And when I went down to Cork, down to the Naval Base in Haulbowline, just there to Ring of Skiddy, I was actually kind of blown away by the scale of things, by, you know, the completely different life. And I said, "Jeannie, why not? In the 2 years of cadets when I could join, you can leave anytime." I think it was like €28. You leave any stage. And I said, "Why not? Let's go down and have an adventure." And 21 years later, I'm still in the middle of the adventure.
Wow, it's crazy. And I mean, the great thing about the Navy is though that you do actually in many ways get to see the world. You know, if you're part of a Navy that says that's kind of active in a sense that it travels around, and the Irish Navy's kind of done a few tours around the world. And the question I wanted to ask you was, if somebody, let's get this out of the way, because if there are people out there listening, I'm sure they want to know. Oh, and one more thing for my listeners outside of Ireland. When you said you were a guard, that doesn't mean you're going to guard a house or something. We have our police force here is called the Gardaí. So it's just Irish name for police. We have a really unique style of calling our police. So just on the basics of what requirements for service are. So if you wanted to say, if I was say in my 20s and I said, I think I'll join the Navy. What do I have to do? What do I have to have?
Well, like the Navy, it can come in at any stage at the moment. So if you don't have to have your leaving cert, but I highly recommend people have their leaving cert for life in general, even if they don't want to stay in the Navy or join the Navy. But you don't have to have, you have to have your junior cert to come in at basic level as you can join as a recruit. But if you do have your leaving cert, and I'd highly recommend it, you can go into anything. So the recruit stage is, I think it's 23 weeks training. Then you go on and you can join different branches. A communications branch, the engineering branch, the seamen's branch, or the logistics branch. So straight away when you come in, the options are numerous. And then you can once you have your leaving cert. So I know loads of the young lads now who came in say they didn't have their leaving cert are now all going back doing their leaving cert maths to go and advance their careers
Brilliant.
because there is so many options for tech trainees. You can be a radar technician, you can be an electrician, carpenter. You can come in as well if you have these like level 5, level 6, level 7 in civilian life, and they'll transfer over to be a direct entry, so you can come straight in. You don't have to do the basic training. They'll give you a few weeks of basic training to militarize you a small bit. But it's in fairness, the options and the choices. Like for myself, I came in as a cadet straight from mammy looking after me at 18 to the Navy looking after me. But I'm a military police officer. I'm a PTI officer. I've been training. I went overseas to the Military Police Centre of Excellence. I trained. As part of PFP, the Partnership for Peace, we're part like so it's not NATO, but I trained young officers on a NATO course. I did that course. There's a million different courses you can do. The options are endless, and I'm not just saying that. It is if people are looking for something different, there's definitely options there.
And after your 20 plus weeks as a cadet, how long is the length of tour then? Is it indefinite, or do you have a, you know, do you, is there a point in your life where you must say retire?
So if the 23 weeks are is in recruits, it's if you come in at that level, and then cadets is basically the same level, but it's more a year and a half training. And you go to college, they send you to college to the National Maritime College to get nautical science or nautical engineering or electrical officers as well. But the basic time to sign up for it, once you have your training done, is 5 years. But depending on how many courses you've done to buy yourself out during that 5 years, it's minimal money, depending again on how many courses. And then they'll stand you on in civilian life if you did want to go. But five years is what you have signed up for.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, unless you aren't really suited for it, either physically or mentally, 5 years is kind of like a really good job. It's great job kind of security, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, no, they like we have, you have medical, dentist. You know, they have really excellent facilities. You can live down in the naval base. They'll feed you. We have an excellent gym facility. It's there is a lot of things down there.
The question of, say, ranks, because I know we all, because obviously we're flooded with British and American TV, so you always hear see these kind of guys, you know, West Point graduates, you know, this kind of lads who come out of these kind of big colleges and schools. Is there a system like that in Ireland, or can you start off as a cadet and then end up being a commander or a captain?
Yeah. So the cadet system is the officer system, and then the recruit system is the enlisted system. In the army, it's called potential officers. You can go from the ranks to officer ranks, and in the naval service, it's CFR is commissioned from the ranks. There is options for that if that's what you're interested.
Right, but it doesn't have the kind of the way they do it, say in West Point or stuff like that. It's not like, you know, daddy's rich guy can just get him into the.
No. Yeah. Definitely not in Ireland anyway.
And it's certainly not really in Europe either, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the European navies would probably operate very similar to the way we do.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all kind of based off the same basic principles.
Okay, so I think the one thing about when I think about the Navy in Ireland is I'm not quite sure how big the Navy is. I've heard people saying, oh, it's more invested in it than the Army, it's more important than the Army. You know, you hear all these kind of things. These
are obviously, don't get me in trouble there.
Yeah, no, these are obviously from people, I say, who sit in pubs watching Ireland playing England, you know, and they think they know everything. Yeah. And I'm the first person to say, I don't know enough. You know, I'm in here in Kildare, which is kind of Army country. We have a large base here in the Curragh, but I drive by it nearly every day and never think about it, you know. You're interested in knowing what the current size of the Navy is. Now, obviously, we don't go into details, but just in terms of the fleet, I mean, how big is the fleet at the moment?
Well, the fleet is, we have 8 ships, but 2 of them are currently in New Zealand after purchasing 2 class vessels, and they'll be over middle of next year. Mm-hmm. But we have, we recently decommissioned Etna, Orl, and Kira, which we had 9. So we'll be getting up to 9 again once we have our MRV, our multi-role vessel. So at the moment we have 8. We have an establishment for 1,100 people, but at the moment I'm sure the personnel issues are fairly out there in the media. We've only 850 odd people at the moment, so that's you know, you might go, oh, that sounds a lot, but it's not when people are training. We have constant training, constantly manning. You know, it's a huge operation to get these 6 ships out to sea. Logistically, like engineering, it's a big, massive machine. But the Navy, back to your question about the Navy, as I was telling you earlier, I didn't really know anything before I joined the Navy about it. But like Ireland is an island, and only in recent years did I actually start to realize this. Like, so when people think of Ireland, they think of like the teddy bear island, but we have 11 times our sea area than land area. So, and we have sovereign rights out to the continental shelf to, you know, to protect it, first of all, which I'm more into it. And obviously then we can, you know, utilize it for whatever we want going forward. But it's, you know, Ireland, I'd love that people thought of Ireland. They thought of, you know, our massive sea area. It's one of the biggest in Europe. And, you know, it's back in the day when England handed over the treaty ports, when we were they wanted to keep Ireland's treaty ports, you know, they said, oh yeah, you can have Ireland, we'll keep the ports. Mm-hmm. But because they're such you know, strategic places for the world.
Yeah, and I think that question, you know, about how big is Ireland in when you count in the sea and you count in the land mass, that came into play I think it was around this time last year, wasn't it, when the Russian fleet was spotted off the coast of, and you know, the real, a lot of people were publishing this map showing Ireland's maritime reach, and I think a lot of people were shocked by that. They actually went, oh, hang on, why are they, actually, they're miles out, why are we worrying about, and then when people showed the actual borderline in the sea, we kind of went, oh, okay. That's what we're supposed to have, right? And I think a lot of people were ignorant to that, and it's true. I would have known that it was quite big, but I wouldn't have known. I couldn't point it out on the map, put it that way. And it just shows, as you say, the commitment that the Navy has to patrol in that area. It must take quite a while. And does it, when you talk about one, some of the vessels, I know some of the vessels have done some work in the Mediterranean with the refugee crisis there. And of course, you've done some trips around the world. But is there one or two permanent vessels that are constantly in, just based around the Irish coastline, and that's their job?
Yeah, so we try and have, at the moment, with our current fleet, we have two ships on at sea at all times. So we'd have them in Irish waters, you know, protecting resources. But obviously, two ships in 11 times the size of Ireland, yeah. You know, it's hard to manage. But we know where the infrastructure is. For example, the hot topic at the moment is the subsea cables. We know where this is. We know, for example, where the fishing fleet is, where like the special areas of conservation, where the SACs are for, you know, the coral reefs we have off the coast. So we know the, and we have this, you know, Operation Sentinel, where we have, where like the English Channel meets French waters, meets Irish waters, where a lot of merchant traffic passes. So, you know, we know out there, we know where the traffic is going, if they're coming up, if they're bringing narcotics up from the Azores, we know where they're going to travel through. So we can, you know, poise our ships in these places. So although we have this massive, you know, people could be doing anything. But like when you're going back to the Russian fleet, like this is not a new thing. We've had all international warships through our waters. So just because they were out there, you know, every vessel has the right of passage through waters. But if they do anything, for example, you know, we might talk about it later on, about, like, you know, if there's a pollution incident or, you know, illegal fishing or obviously people trafficking, drug trafficking, you know, we have to be out there, you know, watching it. So we have to, so it's not a new thing for these vessels, but obviously now, because of the heightened thing, we're wondering, what are they doing out there? You know, do they have Russian spy ships out there? Like, you know, they're out there for the crack, like, what are they doing? So we have to go down there and monitor them, which we are doing all the time, and we send this information back. So, but yeah, no, it is a lot of work, and for the Navy we have at the moment.
Your role, although you kind of outline it on Twitter, which is brilliant, and just for people who don't know, what kind of day do you have? I mean, is it like a job? Do you start at a particular time and then finish?
Yeah, no, it is. So the Navy is the maritime component of the Defence Forces. I won't say it's too many buzzwords here now, but what I get is we have patrol plans. So it's normally 4 weeks out, 2 weeks in, or 4 weeks out, 4 weeks in. But the 2 weeks in or 4 weeks in is a normal, as much, we can take as much downtime as we can, as long as we're getting the ship ready. But it's say a 9-to-5 job. We're getting the ship, whatever equipment was broken or new equipment upgraded, or just re-rationing, like bringing the food on board, stores, you know, getting some downtime and home time, obviously, and general duties on the ship. But then when we go, so on a Thursday before we go, I go up to my operations and I get my orders. So they give me 4 weeks orders, and I then make a plan of where we're going to go, how we're going to have, what our taskings are in those 4 weeks. And then I relay this to my XO, and he goes and he, you know, implements in place. He starts looking internally about how to run a ship, personnel, all that. And then I look externally about, you know, what's in our waters, what are the threats. Is it fisheries? Is it pollution control? Is it search and rescue? What's going on? Obviously, those things are planned in. And, you know, I know I make a plan for 4 weeks, and then mm-hmm. it changes on an hourly basis.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're on the sea, you know. So.
Exactly. And then, like, the weather is constantly changing, so I have to monitor that and see where if the weather's getting too bad, is there nearest anchorage? Where can I be poised to react best in my area of operation if something goes wrong? Or, you know, where, how do I get the closest point to the area of where whatever my tasking is? So on the ship, we do call the hands, it's called. So we're still very traditional. We have the pipe, and call the hands is 700. Then we normally start work, depending on what's going on. Like, you know, we could call earlier and could call later, depending on, you know, daily basis. But normally start at 7 and we work again. And then we're, you know, we have a normal day. So me as captain, I'm a cabin planning what's going on. If it's fisheries, boardings, making sure everything is ready to go. And then, like, normally pipe down, I go to bed normally around 2300, 11 o'clock at night. I normally hit the bunk and go again for the next day. Again, you could have night operations, you could have heel-ops, you know, it changes on a daily basis, but normally that's the plan. We have, you know, in the military is very precise, planned out, so people know what the story is and people love to know what's going on. But in the Navy, and especially in the maritime world, the lads would probably be laughing at me talking here now, but it does change very, very, very often.
But Camille, you just said pipe down. That's where that comes from, doesn't it? Where people say pipe down.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what that was. There you go. So that's a good one.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Actually, you should Google them all. Then it's back obviously from when the English Empire and all those were, the Spanish Empire, all those were going on. But so many of our daily phrases are nautical terms and we don't even know it.
Wow, and it's amazing. See, there you go, learn something new now. Come here, Anna, I'm going to ask you some fanboy questions here just in the meantime about your daily routine, right? So If we have a situation where there's a search and rescue, are the naval ships generally considered strong ships in bad weather, and they would be suitable for going out and sort of rescuing, say, a yacht in bad weather? Or are they equipped for that? Is that the sort of thing that they can do?
Oh, yeah, we can do that, but it's not designed. Like, there is a special, obviously, the RNLI, they have ships designed with special hulls and bottoms on the ships that are designed to go through this weather. But we have, our ships are designed, you know, to be out there because in bad weather as well, because if we do need to protect something, we have to be able to have the capacity. So yeah, our ships, like the worst was, I'll probably share it again when it comes up to the anniversary last year, the worst weather I had to go out, it was a May Day. So basically the Pampan May Day is, obviously people know what May Day is. And it was a Spanish fishing vessel was after sending out a distress about 60 miles west of Loop. And it was force 10, force 11. The weather was very, very strong. I wouldn't be going out. So I got a call at 5 o'clock in the morning that there was a vessel in trouble. So I had to make a call right then and there. Am I going to go respond? So there's like 30, on one of those Spanish vessels, there's about 13 normally men. So we didn't know whether they were sinking, because what happened was actually a wave had come and broken all their windows of the bridge, and they had lost all communication. So we have, obviously everything has a backup for a backup. So they had pressed the button, so we didn't know what was going on. So we responded, we went out, but I would say I was scared, I suppose, as much as I want, you know, obviously we're trained for this, whatever, but still, you know, a bit scary. We went out, but that, luckily, there was a rescue 117, got there, head out, and they said that they were fine. They had a sister ship on the way to tow them in. So we were stood down and we went back, but we'd gotten about 10, 15 miles west of the Bull Rock, and it was, you know, and it's fine going into it or with it behind it, but it's the turning. I don't know, once that way the wave comes on the beam, you know, you have to get through it. But yeah, that was the scariest weather we went out.
And in terms of, say, you were talking about pollution there, does this happen a lot in Ireland off the Irish coast? Do you get a lot of people like involved in that sort of thing, and is it illegal dumping or something like that? Or
obviously, we're a member of Europe, and which is, I think, is obviously an excellent thing that we. So Europe has, or the European Maritime Safety Agency, they have satellites, and they take pictures. They're constantly monitoring the seas, and obviously loads of things, but just for pollution control. So what would happen was I get an email in from my operations that they've been sending from Europe, saying with a satellite picture with possible pollution. So we would drive down to this area and we take water samples. Obviously, you know, if there's an oil slick or if there's pollution, you'll see it. But we still go down to the area, take samples, get our pass, our drone. We have a drone to get up, take pictures of the wider area to see, obviously work out the tides, the wind, has it drifted left or right? Like, you know, because obviously the picture we're taken, it's going to change. So my navigation officer will work all that out and go down and have a look and take samples. But and then just send the samples back up to our operations, and then they send back and make a report to Europe. But like, if someone is going to do that, they're going to have, you know, they're going to know, you're going to know you have an oil slick or you're dumping. So they'll have turned. So since 9/11, I don't know if you know too much about the maritime industry. So normally things are reactive. So like after Titanic sank, Safety of Life at Sea was brought in, SOLAS it's called. And, you know, so now it's illegal to drive back past a vessel when you're at sea. If they're in trouble, distress, you would be you know, you'll be charged for it. And obviously all the different life rafts, the building of ships, all that was. So since 9/11, there was more, you know, obviously that heightened everyone again. Oh, we need to make sure. So every ship over 15 meters has to have AIS, which is like a GPS responder. And we can see, you can go on, I'm sure you have Flight Tracker. Loads of people follow Flight Tracker, but there's obviously a maritime tracker as well. So Vessel Finder or marine traffic, and you can go, which is really cool. So for example, you know, we know the pattern of life when we're out there. So if the vessel, if a vessel's, we can see on our radar, or we can see a vessel that doesn't have AIS, straight away we're like, why doesn't he have AIS? This is not right. So we drive over and investigate it. So for example, if there was an oil slick, the lad would have his AIS turned off. So we have to go down to the area now and see what other vessels are in the area, or a pollution event, and, you know, but report them back. And then we report them back, and then the authorities go on and take over that. But that's, but then we also work with Europe. It's MAOCN, oh God, all these acronyms. I am actually a good crack at parties. Maritime Agency, MAOC. So basically it's a European agency for narcotics. And they will send on information through our operations to our Defence Forces headquarters out to us. And we do a lot of surveillance. So, for example, if a vessel is coming, say, up from the Azores or Morocco or across America, wherever it's coming from, say it's going to enter Irish waters in a position, we will drive down, depending on if it's covert or overt. We will stay away, watch it. And, you know, time is money at these places. You know, they don't want to go from A to B at a certain speed, constant. They don't want to be altering. So, for example, if a vessel is slowing down, if it's altering, if you see another vessel heading towards it, you know, if it's acting unusual, it's anyone will see it. It's not years of training. Straight away, you'll see that's unusual activity. What's going on? We drive down and take it. Then, for example, if it left our waters and headed to France or headed towards, we'd pass that under ops, and then the ops pass it on to this MAOC in, and they get the French authorities to stand off it. But, you know, they're smasher. They're bringing narcotics in by submarine now. It's you know, they're two steps ahead.
It's amazing, isn't it? And like, you know, I think we're all generally ignorant to how it's done, because what happens is, you know, people like me will just hear the end result. Like a couple of weeks ago, you know, there was a massive cocaine find, for example. And then we just hear the end result. We don't hear all the hard work that you guys have to do, constant. Like, I mean, it's a lot of sitting around, isn't there? And looking through binoculars and keeping an eye on the screens and just kind of watching out for all that.
Even down, you know, whatever surveillance we're doing, you know, it's a lot. You know, when you get there first, you're like, oh, this is so cool. And then maybe 2 or 3 hours into it, you're like, okay, this is not the initial coolness has worn off. But yeah, but it's still, we're still doing stuff. And I like doing things that are, you know, I can take as a bigger picture. This is not only good for, you know, the Navy or Ireland, it's good for Europe, it's good for the world. So, you know, you want to be, that's the sort of thing you want to be doing. Think, yeah, I'm actually making a difference.
And here's a funny question I have to ask you. From time to time, you see ships on the sea. I've taken the odd trip to France or whatever. But is the ocean around Ireland, is the seas around Ireland, are they very busy?
Yeah, as I said, there is like traffic lanes. There's traffic separation schemes. There's roundabouts at sea. There's all that sort of thing.
Wow, that's amazing. I never knew that.
It's really, really cool. But obviously you'll have choke points, whether you're going into English Channel, going up the Irish Sea. You know, there's different routes over to America. You know, you know where the traffic's bad. Like recently went to Roscoff for a diplomatic mission, and you know, you're crossing traffic separation scheme, but everything is like, you know, you have all these rules, like you have your ship driving rules at the sea, and like for UNCLOS, it's like United Nations Convention Law of the Sea, I think it was 19, oh geez, I don't know what year it was started. But so obviously I could be passing a Liberian ship, I could be passing a British ship, I could be passing Australian ship, so everything has to have the one rules. So we have to, you know, every it's, you know, it's very laid down, because obviously it's very dangerous out there.
I still see it, you know, if we go to somewhere like, say, you know, coming down around Land's End there and coming into Roscoff or Cherbourg, you can begin to see how busy it gets at that point, especially if we're doing the morning kind of ferry, you know, and then at night, of course, that's even more interesting, because I was just on the recent one from France, and I just brought the two kids out at night, and I said, look around, and it was just lights everywhere. Yeah, you know, and they were amazed at that, because they were saying, like, we're out in the sea. And I said, yeah, but it's a little bit like the M50.
Exactly. At certain points, when we're, say, transiting from different things, you're you're out there. I went to Cairo one time, went to the, I think it was the Bedouin people out in the desert, and they were saying, oh, look at the beautiful sky, like this. And it was beautiful, but I was in my head, I was like, geez, like the West Coast, when you're whatever 50, 60, 200 miles off, that is amazing to see the nights, the lights, the stars, and the nothing else, nothingness.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. That's brilliant. Actually, I never thought about that because, you know, I've obviously gone up to the Wicklow Mountains, not being far away, and done that with a telescope. But yeah, that must be amazing when you've absolutely zero kind of, you know, zero
light
light.
Pollution.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing.
Yeah.
So your reaction to your Twitter account, are you kind of, were you amazed at the amount of people who came back to you and just kind of likes or comments and all that? How does that work for you?
Yeah, no, that was one of the things because we're having sort of personnel issues at the moment. So I think when I'm doing tours of the ship, or we get into Galway or Dublin or wherever, I tell Irish people, you know, if you don't feel invested in or engaged in it, you know, like, you know, and we're after coming so desensitized to horrors or, you know, whatever's going on. I was like, how am I going to get people engaged? How am I going to think that, like, this, the Irish Navy is your Navy? Like, this is you. You pay your taxes. That pays my wages. That buys these ships. So I want people to think that this is yours. So I said, how am I going? Obviously, there's a lot of operation security, OPSEC, we call it. And, you know, so sometimes when I'm posting things, it's 2 or 3 days later, or, you know, a picture I took a year ago. So it's not, so some things are exactly as it happened the time, but I don't give away the ship's position. But I wanted to let people know, like, you know, this is your Navy. This is what we do. You know, it's I'm a normal girl from Carlow that, you know, is out here trying to help Ireland protect its resources, its people, and, you know, do a good job for you. But if you don't feel invested, engaged, so that's why I start doing it myself. And, you know, it was interesting. You do get the odd comments. I suppose Twitter can be a terrible place at times, but you know, I normally block as soon as that. But it's you know, you have the warriors to say, oh, the young lad there didn't have his rank marking on right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh Jesus, you know,
I'm
out
yeah.
there doing this work, you know, and flat out, and, you know, people are think they know better than you are. But no, I'm delighted that people, you know, people that you're saying that you saw your wife, and people are like, oh Ginny, yeah, that's what we do. That's what I wanted.
And it's great because, I mean, I never think about those kind of, I call them pathetic, you know, sort of responses
yeah.
where, you know,
yeah, yeah.
you get it a lot. If you have a classic car, for example, you'll always get some guy saying, that's not the proper hove caps for that car. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And I say, well, here's eBay. You can buy them for me then, you know.
Exactly. But no, I like that because people are obviously very passionate as well.
Yeah.
You know, you have ex-people and people, you know, and they like, they want to see the best. So, you know, and I take that on board as well. Like they're only saying this because, you know, they're a bit upset by whatever was going on, but you know, on my ship and in the Navy we have high standards, and so hopefully there's not too many of those people saying what's going on.
Yeah, look, you can't have a Navy without high standards. That's what I always
exactly.
say. You know, it's because it's
yeah.
not like you're kind of, you kind of get away with some of it maybe if you're standing army, but when you're at sea, everything has to be, you know, proper ship shape, to use a better expression.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
when it comes to safety as well, it's priority as well, you know, I'm quite sure. Now, come here, a more interesting question I have to ask you. Memorable places that you visited while in service. There must be loads of them. Come on, give us one
yeah,
or two.
Yeah, no, there is. And look, I won't bore you with it, but
no, you're not boring me at all. This is brilliant. This is what everybody's been waiting for. This is the big questions.
Oh, yeah, no, I died in 2001, so it was the Celtic timer times, and the biggest trip I went on was down to Asia. We went, I was in Tokyo, I was in Shanghai, I was in Hong Kong, I was in Malaysia, we were in Incheon in India, we were in Korea, we were in Eritrea. We were very, very busy. So we had lunches during the day for the diplomats and for, like, say, the head of Toshiba was on board, you know, to future of Ireland. So we brought loads of Irish products, Kerrygold, you know, Guinness, whatever companies had part of Enterprise Ireland. And, you know, and what Irish people are brilliant at doing, and I notice that they are so good at, like, engaging people, or just, you know, as you say, go in and have the crack and relax people, and, you know, just chat away. And I think that's what Irish people are best in the rest of the world. And maybe we're just a bit more relaxed. But where else? We're in the Baltic. I was in St. Petersburg, Tallinn in Estonia, up the fjords in Norway. Helsinki, where else were we, like, loads of places. I was over in America, in Boston.
Curious to know what you thought when you maybe did you bump into any of the Navy over there?
Yeah, we normally invite them. We normally invite them down as well, and you know, and we you know because you have a joint you know common interests, and you know, the sea is the sea. Obviously, the west coast of Ireland is actually one of the is the most you know high seas in the world. So you know, we are a bit unfortunate that way. But you know, you have common and the military. You know, everyone has the same basic training where you're getting shouted at, and you know. Do that again and all that. So you know, the military. Then once you relax and people get in, it's you know, it's great cracking. Meet all those sort of people.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of Boylans and McWires and all that. In the U.S. Navy and loads of Shawnees as well. You know, come here. I have to ask you: did you ever go north? I mean, have you ever been up to the Arctics?
No, no, we've never been up there. I don't think that ship has ever been up to Iceland. I don't think anything has been up past obviously Rockall. Rockall is the first north I've been anyway, and the Hatton Bank to the east. Actually, a really interesting thing. You're telling me, you know, the Lord of the Rings. All his characters are named after like sea bites or shelves. So like Farin Gondor, Farin. Oh God, like, all those names are named after.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. He that's where he got a lot of them in the Atlantic. So that's where he got a lot of his names for his Isengrad. All those.
Wow, that's amazing. I must have to tell my wife, she's a big fan of the Lord of the Rings. I can't wait to tell her that.
I was actually transiting over towards, we're heading over to America, and one of the lads I was on watch with pointed out a good few years ago. And yeah, no, it's a cool thing as well.
Can we just talk a second about Rockall? Because it has a kind of a weird history, hasn't it? Rockall is this kind of rock that's like, what, 500 kilometres off the coast of north of Ireland, is it, around there?
Yeah, so it's obviously because a continental shelf transits out that far. You know, lots of people want because who knows what resources are there.
Yes.
So like obviously Britain, Ireland, Iceland, we all have, you know, we were all claiming it. That's the history from it.
Yeah, because I mean, I even remember as a kid, wasn't there? There was a guy, like, I think he was a politician in Dublin, and he was Dublin Bay Loftus Rockall was his name, Sean Dublin Bay Loftus. And I think he started off as Dublin Bay Loftus. His name was Sean Dublin Bay Loftus. And then he put in the Dublin Bay because he was trying to fight for people's, you know, say, kind of. Compensation, I think, for the reclaiming that was going on at the time, the 60s and 70s. And then he's just stuck Rockall on his name as well. And I was saying to myself, like, imagine like being introduced to yourself, like, my name's Sean Dublin Bay Loftus Rockall. You know, I was so that's it. So it just shows you back in the 1970s, I think there was much more of a, because even as a kid, I remember there was much more of a hula about it. You know, fellas going over there and staying weak there or something. You know,
and it was a British lad who got helicoptered onto it. And I don't know now the exact route, but for an island to be inhabited island, somebody has to live on it for 2 weeks. But it is like we're up. It's just a big rock sticking out. Like it's just you couldn't live on it. But this lad anyway pretended he got helicopter onto it and had his rations, and he said he lived on it for 2 weeks. So it's just, you know, yourself. He had the British flag and all that. But
Do you know the wonderful thing I've noticed about being on a ship is that you get to see everything from a completely different perspective, don't you? I mean, you know, if you've obviously had that a lot. So you're coming in, when you come into Cork, for example, or Ringaskiddy, you're seeing it from the sea in. Do you ever get tired of that? Does it still have a unique experience?
Yeah, no, like the Irish coast, obviously I've been around a lot of coasts, like especially the west coast, north coast. It's absolutely amazing. Like it's breathtaking. When we were transiting up, you can see the crew all, everyone comes up and looks at it. And what we were messing with one of the young lads saying that you know, the Three Sisters and stuff up there, we're saying that that's where Jurassic Park was, because that's what it looks like. That's where Jurassic Park was filmed, you know, because obviously we have the banter when we're at, you know, up to a point. But it's absolutely beautiful. But coming into Cork Harbour, Cork Harbour is the second largest natural harbour in the world. Like it's still fairly impressive. And people say that, do you see much wildlife? We had an experience there. We were launching boats there south of Ireland, and there was about 5 or 6 minke whales, and they were right up beside the ship. Even dolphins, porpoises, whatever I see, I still stop. The lads would call me up because they know I'm interested in that sort of stuff, but it's still beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen whales in the Canary Islands, but they were kind of small ones, and I've never seen a big one. It's probably my goal in life to spot a big one just before I depart. So time away from service, Grace, what do you like to do? I know you were saying to me earlier on before we were recording that you like the AIL football, so...
Yeah, no, and obviously the Irish women won last night through to Australia, the World Cup down in Australia, so that was pretty amazing. Yeah, no, throughout my... I had 6 brothers, so I had no choice but to play football and GAA and soccer, we'd be beating heads off each other. But I still play, and after taking up reffing recently enough, so actually I have two matches to ref on Sunday. But
Okay.
so
Are they for
my wife.
GAA or football or what?
Oh no, soccer. So yeah, I stopped GAA with. I wasn't able to keep up with the young ones, but with soccer, I'm able to. I'm able to stand a bit. I'm 39 now, so I'm near the end of my career. But I joined Kilworth Ladies, and they're not too competitive now. We just it's more of a crack. We actually went up to the pub to watch the match last night in Kilworth. But it's you know, I love playing sports, and I don't know. Even I do a bit of running as well. It's just so good for your mental health to think about something
For
else,
sure,
because
yeah.
obviously the Navy, it's a very, very hard job. The captain of a ship, I was, you know, at times I was very stressed. So just to do that, to take away on, oh, did you see the terrible tackle trees I did on me last night? You know, it's just so, you know, you can just take your brain away and, you know, have something else to think about. But, you know, I do love that. But my wife has given me a bit of, so I'm after being away from sea, and now I'm after signing up, and I'm reffing two matches on Sunday. So
Constantly
she's not
running
too happy
off.
with me. Yeah.
So can I ask you a question about, say, women in the Navy? Just going back to that. There's obviously lots of women in the Navy because you have. There's not. You weren't the only one to command a ship. Is there's a couple of other girls that did it too,
No,
wasn't there?
I'm either the sixth or the seventh female the captain of a ship. So no, it's not. They started taking females into the Navy in 1995, which is, you know, in the Army was 90, but that was because of, you know, shower facilities, cabin facilities, you know. But no, now I think, but still, it's still very bad. I think it's 6% females in the Navy, which is still a very, very low percentage. But you know, I do a bit, and I used to do a bit of going around to schools and talking to girls, or go to colleges and telling them about, you know, the different about the maritime, about the, you know, the especially I'm really proud that Ireland did that, went down to the Mediterranean, saved 18,000 people. So I'm really passionate about that. I'd like to tell people, like, 90%, and I'm not saying this, of the girls would come up afterwards. It'd be 90%, maybe one or two fellas. Maybe it's because I'm a girl, they feel more comfortable talking to me. But they'd be asking, oh, that's so cool. And then I'd be asking, like, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to college to do arts, or I'm going to college to be a national teacher. And then I'm like, oh, would you ever think about joining Navy? Oh God, no, I wouldn't be able for that. And then I'm like, what? Why wouldn't you be able? Like, I think girls think that they are, you know, oh, they wouldn't be able for it. But like that, I think that's half the problem as well. We need to get them. You are 100% equal, as you know, we're equal as male. So trying to get more girls into it. But on my ship there, I just left, we had, including myself, we had seven females, which was a lot. But so I don't know, it was, we were to send them out for me to look after them or what, but it was good to have that many females.
Yeah, I can't stand this equality thing. I'm 5'6". I wouldn't last an hour in the Navy when I was 21. So if anybody turns around and said, that's only for men, they say, well, you can count me out. I don't know what I am then, because I'm like most Irish lads, because my wife is Polish. And the one thing she always says to me, what is going on with you fellas? You're all under 5'5" or 5'6". So I don't know how we can't qualify alone. Grace, last question I wanted to ask you. What when you're downtime is there, what do you read, watch, or listen to when you're at home? I asked this of all of my guests.
Yeah, I've listened to all a good few of your podcasts
Did you?
there.
Oh, great. That's brilliant. Yeah, super. Yeah,
So
thanks.
actually, I heard one yesterday. I was driving home, the traffic now, Dunkettle roundabout is getting done, the tunnel. So I
Nice.
was in the
That's in
car for an hour and a
Cork.
half
Yeah,
coming home. So I
right.
listened to his, but he was saying it's a sin on, I think it's Channel 4 or one, but that was because it reminded me. I did watch that recently, well, a while ago. That's absolutely. He was saying he was bawling. Oh, Ginny Mac, I was inconsolable watching that. It was, you know, to think back, that's actually what happened. And even, you know, the hangover of that. That was that 1980s. Like even today, you know, it's still like that. You know, to a certain point, like, you know, and you can see why people are like that. But I listen to, you know, because I have a little boy who's two and a little girl who's four. And you know, and then being away at sea, you know, life has been really stressful. So I try and just wind down. So I like other podcasts I like listen to is, you know, Joanne McNally. It's My Therapist Ghosted Me.
Oh yes, I've
It's
seen that. That's very high in the Apple rankings here in Ireland.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's very no, it's very lowbrow stuff, but it's, you know, it's hilarious. Good to shut off the brain. And
Absolutely.
I want to get Kelly Harrington's, you know, the boxer, Irish female boxers, after
Yeah.
writing a book. So I'm gonna get, that's the next thing I want to get out and read. But yeah, that's what I'm doing at the moment.
And did you go and see Top Gun?
Oh, 100%. Oh, stop.
It was great, wasn't it? I loved it. I thought it was brilliant, now, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. And the music and everything. It was just, you know, cast. We watched the Top Gun on a ship one evening as a group in the wardroom. And then, well, we didn't go together, but then we all watched Top Gun. Yeah, no, it's just feel good. And that's the sort of stuff you want. Cool planes and ships. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I mean, I kind of have a fanship about Cruise. I just think he's bonkers and brilliant in the same book, you know. And I kind of say to myself, he could actually, if there was a war tomorrow, like, you know, the way during World War II you had all the Hollywood stars he could do it. You know, he'd be captain of a ship in 6 weeks. Yeah. You know, there's just nothing that guy is capable of. I mean, like, because you look at him and he's. Okay, you know, he has a certain lifestyle, that's fine. But I think that lifestyle has him conditioned in such a way that he's able to put his hand to anything and do it moderately well, or either brilliantly. Yeah, yeah. You know, fly a helicopter or whatever. And I think when I watched the film, I was amazed at how interactive he was in it. You know, he wasn't just sitting back and saying, okay, I'm going to just dial this in, you know. And it was a brilliant film. And I'm just wondering, as a naval person, were you watching it going, you know, okay, that looks very weird, but it's brilliant at the same time?
Yeah, no, it's a bit cringy and stuff, but it's... but still, no, I thought it was brilliant. No, I agree with you. I think there is an equal measure of brilliance and craziness to him. But definitely. He's the stuff he's doing is for a man of his age is fairly. And A Few Good Men, there's another excellent film, naval film that he's in as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's 60. It's amazing, like, when you think about it. Like, Grace, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I think I'm about to take nearly an hour of your time, so apologies on that.
Oh, yeah, no problem at all.
How can we get you on Twitter? Do you want to give everyone your Twitter handle so we can get lots of followers?
It's at Fanning Grace, that's it, Fanning Grace, brilliant. On Twitter.
Great stuff. Thanks a million for joining me. And thanks very much to all of you out there. You've been listening to The Comfortable Spot. My name is Ken Sweeney, and I will talk to you real soon. So take care, y'all. Bye-bye. ¶¶